We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets just completed a 0-4 week, losing to Miami, Phoenix, San Antonio, and Detroit. And unlike all previous weeks, they lost all of them by a good margin except for the Detroit game. Some would say we should have definitely won that game anyways. So, Michael, did you see anything this week that was particularly exciting or something that might give us hope that this could turn around? Or are you just already happy that it's going this way and want us to lose as much as possible?
Wow. It's kind of tough. I guess exciting. I actually did kind of like the way Aminu played in a couple of stretches. Vasquez, at least statistically, had a couple of very impressive games this week. And again, I don't think that either of those guys are going to be definite starters in their future. But I think with what Vasquez showed this week, you know, you at least feel like you have a good backup point guard on the roster at a really cheap price for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people are getting really excited about Vasquez, and they want to insert him next to Jarrett Jack in the starting lineup. And, you know, I don't disagree because our shooting guard options without Eric Gordon are so terrible. But, I mean, Vasquez has his moments, but you can watch if he's matched up against any sort of guard who has athleticism and can move their feet, he cannot get past the three-point line on a pick and roll. He just can't turn the corner. And his only option is to do a pull-up mid-range. And, I mean, during the first three quarters against the Hornets, when teams aren't playing super hard, they're not focused, because we are the bottom feeder. Why should they put all their effort out there? The Hornets stay close. Vasquez looks pretty decent. And then generally in the fourth quarter, they turn up the defensive pressure, and suddenly the Hornets can't get anything going. And Vasquez, he's not a guy you want as your primary option.
Yeah, but I think he can be a decent combo guard off the bench. I mean, like a seventh man. I guess it depends on, you know, where you want to put ceilings at. I know the Hornets were, you know, that initial trade they did with the Rockets, a part of that was to get Goran Dragic, you know, to be a backup point guard and somebody that they could possibly develop. I think Vasquez is every bit as good as that. And like I said, you have him under contract for a couple more years cheap. So That's a. I mean, the funny thing with this team is I just see a ton of guys I would want on my team as 6th through 11th men. The problem is that they're starting.
Right. And, I mean, I agree entirely. I think that Vasquez is a better backup point guard than Goran Dragic. I mean, Dragic is a better backup combo guard because he's actually probably more skilled at scoring than Vasquez. But Vasquez is a better passer and better at setting the table. So, I mean, yeah, I like that. I mean, it's cringeworthy. I mean, just look at our starting lineup last night against Detroit. Or I guess two nights, since this will be Monday when we're talking about this. Jason Smith is our starting power forward. And our good buddy DeJuan Summers is our starting shooting guard. And Rivas Vasquez is our starting point guard.
I saw the opening lineup come up on the screen, and I tried to put myself in a Detroit Pistons fan's shoes, who probably has never watched a Hornets game. You watch your Pistons, you're tuning in for the game that night. And to watch that opening lineup, I could honestly imagine most casual Pistons fans that night not knowing 3 to 4 out of the 5 starters. And I quickly went and searched what the starting lineup was for the last awful Hornets team we had, the 18-64 team right before Chris Paul. And honestly, I would take that starting lineup in a second over what the Hornets put out there last night.
So what would it have been, like P.J. Brown, David West for some part of the season?
Desmond Mason. And leading scorer, Lee Nalon.
Yeah, I remember Nalon.
Yeah. I mean, it was pathetic back then, but that starting lineup they trotted out there last night was, again, it would be a decent second unit. I love, you know, Vasquez as a future on the second unit, Ion, Jason Smith, whatever, but this team needs to get some guys who, you know, are starter material. You can't just keep trotting out second unit guys for both units.
Right. No, I agree entirely. And even neither of our starters are particularly awesome quality. I mean, the standard starters that we have that we're playing right now, they're not the good ones.
Yeah, but after all that said, I mean, again, if I'm a Pistons fan and never watched a Hornets game, I left that game last night thinking Trevor Ariza was all-star.
No, it was so ridiculous. I'm like, wow, we got freaking Kobe Bryant running around out there. He was insane.
The whole week, all I had in my head was your voice going, Trevor Ariza will retire a Hornet. And I was cringing all week. I mean, I would wake up in cold sweats. He was absolutely awful the whole week. And I was coming on this podcast just to bash him. And then, almost as if he knew, he just decided to put up probably his best game as a Hornet.
26 points on 12 shots.
Ugh.
That's crazy.
And you said in your post game that you feel like Aminu lucks into his offense.
Uh-huh.
You don't feel the same about Ariza? I mean,
No, I don't, actually. So, I mean, Ariza, I actually think Ariza makes the correct move a lot of the time when he gets the ball. I just think he sucks at finishing it. And he contorts himself in these weird ways to try to get shots off because he doesn't have, like, a finishing move to get the shot. He doesn't have, like, a floater that he can go to. He's just always trying to, like, twist himself in these bizarre pretzel shapes to get the ball in the hole. But I actually think he makes the right decision most of the time. I think Aminu doesn't know what the fuck he's doing and just kind of charges the basket and throws the ball at it and hopes it goes in.
Yeah, I agree. Although I think that Aminu has kind of been hurt by a lot of 50-50 calls this week. There was another one in the game last night where I think if he's LeBron James or a star, he would have quite a few three-point plays this year that he's just not getting the benefit of the doubt on. But I'm at least glad that he's going, you know, and being a little bit more aggressive. And he's still got to remember, I mean, a lot of Hornets fans are talking about the upcoming draft and a guy like, you know, Thomas Robinson, who I would love to get if we can't get Anthony Davis. But Aminu's younger than he is. He's younger than a lot of guys in this, you know, that would even be rookies next year. So I still think we got to give him time. All right, so we just before we get on, I think Chris Kamen is something else we should discuss. But right now we've seen arguably the two best teams in the league. The Hornets have played Oklahoma City twice, and this week they played Miami. From what you've seen, Does anybody stand out to you as a, I know it's not Hornets related, but somebody is your favorite for the NBA title? Did you like what you saw from Miami this week?
Yeah, I think Miami's, I mean, it's hard to watch a Hornets game and decide how good Miami's going to be. But if Miami, I mean, because last year they didn't have Mike Miller, they didn't have Battier, and that new point guard kid they have, what's his name?
Norris Cole.
I mean, those are three very nice additions. I mean, I would, if anybody would rather have Mike Bibby over Norris Cole, they're batshit crazy.
Right. Technically, Haslam's an addition too, because he wasn't really there and wasn't full strength last year.
Right. I mean, I think the Heat are infinitely more dangerous this year than they were last year. And last year they made it to the finals. However, I also think that the Bulls are more dangerous this year than they were last year. So that's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight in the Eastern Conference to see which of those two come out.
But wait, the only guy the Bulls really added was Richard Hamilton, who all last year you were telling me the Hornets need to stay 1,000 feet away from.
And I don't think Richard Hamilton is the part that's making that that much better. I just think that team as a whole is playing better defense than they did last year.
No, I mean, I watched the first half of the Hornets Heat game and was completely unimpressed. And then the first 6 or 7 minutes of the second half, you could tell the Heat were just done with it. And they went on a surge and they probably played their best level of basketball on both ends. And I think the Heat at their best, I haven't seen anybody close to that level. It's just, you know, wondering if they're going to be able to concentrate and focus and get out on the break and play that kind of defense. But,
and I actually think that their coach made the correct decision basically between Bosch and James. Of course, yeah, James agree with us, but they don't play with Bosch in the low post or even in the high post really anymore. He floats like David West used to.
Right.
And James is the one kind of entering the high post and getting the offense started. And that's real. I mean, James is a better power forward than Chris Bosh is. And Chris Bosh is a better small forward, but not better than James. But you see what I mean? I mean, it's like, I think that those two roles are better suited for those two players. Bosh is not a banger, and LeBron James can, he's a freak of nature.
Yeah. No, I agree. They really impressed me in the second half, but all right, enough non-Hornets. Back to Hornets. So there was an interesting turn this week in the Chris Kaman saga. We were on last week talking about possible trades, and all of a sudden, Demps, again, issues a press statement for the Hornets off issue more press releases for stuff that most teams don't than anybody I've seen. But they issue a press statement saying that Chris Kaman, who is on the team, will be back with the team. okay, starting on Sunday. What did you take out of that whole situation?
So I think one of three things has happened here. One, and this is as likely as any others, the league office stepped in, looked at the offers that Dell Demps was garnering from the league and said, forget about it. We'd rather just have him play out the season and come off the books and all you're getting back here is a 2-year contract, and we don't want to pay for that, and we want the books to be as clean as possible for whoever we try to sell this to. Second option, a team like the Pacers want to get Chris Kaman, but they're worried that maybe the reason why the Hornets shut him down and put him on the sidelines rather than having him play for the team and then trading him is that maybe he has an injury and they want to see him play. And third option, Dell Demps has lost his mind and wants to play Chris Kaman for this team because he thinks he can help us win, as if we want to win at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be weird. I want to eliminate three, hopefully, because I don't want a GM who lost his mind. But, I mean, even as recently as a week ago, Monty came out and made statements that Emeka needs 30 minutes a game to be productive. And, you know, they had both said that they need to get the young guys some playing time. And now Carl Landry and Jason Smith are both banged up. So, you know, maybe Kaman could help a little bit there, but it's not like they knew that was going to happen before they put out this press release. So I'm going away from three. And let me offer a fourth possibility.
OK. Okay.
Okay, so Dell Demps is kind of hamstrung by the league. He knows that you're exactly right. The league wants to get salary off the books. And just one other thing that kind of bothers me. You didn't say it, but a lot of other people did. But, okay, so people are saying just let Kamen come off the books, and that way we get salary cap room in the off season. Well, ideally, you would just trade him for other expiring contracts and a good asset. It's not like it's a one or the other thing. Of course, right. The Hornets aren't going to trade him for more salary, but they could trade him to the Pacers for essentially nobody and a first round pick or right. others. So anyway, so I'm 100% sure that he's not going to add salary per the league's orders, but this ownership issue is going to be settled if I had to bet before the trade deadline. Dell Demps is probably very aware of this, and with the league no longer meddling in his business and an owner who now understands the situation and might want to be more aggressive than the league, is there any chance that Dell Demps is just biding time for the owner to come in, and then that way he could explore more trade possibilities rather than probably the very small list of what he could take back in return from the league?
And sure, he could be thinking that way, and that would be nice. But here's my worry. There hasn't been anything announced at all. There hasn't been a buyer selected. I mean, there's all kinds of rumblings behind the scenes of these people and that people and so-and-so making, offers and stuff like that. But none of it has come to even the point that the league says we have this potential set of owner for the Hornets that we want to sell them to. And when you make the, you're to the point of that declaration, there's still a crap load of work that has to happen to close a deal. You saw with Alex Morello with the Atlanta Hawks, they said that was happening, and it was like a month later, suddenly it wasn't, because all that paperwork, all the financing has to fall in place. So I'm kind of wondering, if they declare it, Monday, does that help Dell Demps? Is the deal going to close in time for him to be able to leverage a new owner's potential decision making? I don't know.
Yeah. So, it's just something to where I can't believe. I mean, to me, to take him off the trade market and even risk injury would make me believe that nothing was off. I mean, we saw what happened to Carl Landry last night. Landry, we still don't know yet. As of right now doing this podcast, but he's another guy that they were looking to possibly trade in March. And now if he's significantly injured, the potential for that is gone. And to bring Kamen back would make me believe that they weren't offered anything more than maybe a second round pick. I mean, I think if the Pacers offered a first round pick and Louis Amundsen or Jeff Foss or whoever, the Hornets would have jumped on that, right? Or do you still think that they want more and that wasn't even enough for them?
No, I agree. I think that's what they would jump on. The quotes I've seen from unnamed sources are that the teams the Hornets have talked to have not been willing to, give them the level of draft compensation they're requesting, which makes me think that they're trying to get first round picks and people are like, what? I mean, why should we give you a first rounder for someone who's off the books at the end of the year, unless we're desperate?
Yeah, I guess I just don't. I mean, I guess maybe teams like this draft so much more. I mean, teams were just throwing away first round picks, especially in the 20s in the past. The Pacers right now would be around pick 23 or 24. And if they really want to make a push, I mean, they met Chicago in the playoffs last year. They could meet them again. Chicago just has a front line that is, full of guys that they just throw at you in waves. I can't, I can't imagine that they wouldn't, for a pick that'll be in the late 20s anyway, that they wouldn't want to take on somebody like Kamen. But yeah, that's just got to be the feeling, is that they're not getting any offers. I know Houston was in the mix. I think if Houston would have thrown in either their pick or the Knicks pick, Montagunas or Patrick Patterson, along with expiring contracts. I think if they would have thrown in any of those four pieces, the Hornets would have jumped. So you just got to imagine. I mean, you see Milwaukee's interested, but as we discussed, they don't really have the expirings. So it's a situation where I think that they must have gotten awful offers. But even then, I don't know if you don't just take those. Because what is Damon going to do? Maybe he helps you win a couple games? You don't want that.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing with this is Kamen is completely worthless to the Hornets, except to help their rebounding to win games now,
right.
Which makes him worthless because we don't want to win games now. He is done at the end of the season. He's gone.
Right.
He walks out that door. And if for some reason we really love Kamen, you could still trade him to another team and then sign him this summer. So, I mean, it's just, I'm hoping that, you know, he's going out, he plays a couple games, and then some team that just wanted to see him play a couple games and make sure he's okay, you know, suddenly throws a late first rounder at us and I don't have to see him anymore.
Yeah, and personally, I'm rooting for the Pacers because if the Hornets could trade him and pick up a player exception, you know, in the Pacers trade, I mean, they could trade him to the – I would even trade him to the Pacers for a 2016 second-round pick, one of those kind of trades, because they would get that big player exception – from the Pacers, and then what you could do is on draft night you could take back a bad contract and a first round pick, or you know, see my whole thing, if I was Dell Demps, I would have one goal and one goal only, and that would be to get two top six picks for the upcoming draft. I think there's seven kind of can't miss guys. You always figure one is going to stay in school. So I need two top six picks. The Hornets pick is going to be top six. And I figure that Minnesota pick will be 10 to 12. I'm trying to get as many assets together to get that pick up to a top six. And if I have a huge trade exception like that, you know, the Nets are going to be looking to dump salary in the summer so they could go after Dwight Howard or whatever they got to do. Maybe I take on one of their back contracts to get into the top six, whatever. But I would even do that came into the Pacers trade for absolutely nothing but the trade exception, just to have that to use in deals in the future.
Yeah, and I think that if they don't trade Kamen for anything, for whatever reason, whether it's the league office stopping them, or I think they're going to regret having not done it.
I completely agree. Okay, you just used the word regret, and that's ironic because we're going to start our first annual Filled with Regret. This is just going to be a little segment where we look back at some of the moves that have been made. We're limiting this to just the Dell Demps regime, and admittedly did a fantastic job. I think we praise him enough, had a lot of great moves over the past year and a half. But we're going to look at some that maybe weren't so great, and we'll go on a 0 to 10 scale. So 0 means that you don't regret it at all. 10 would be if you had a flux capacitor, could go back in time, you would do whatever it took to stop said trade or move from being made. Are you ready to go, sir?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, so one of Demps' first moves after his famous meeting with Chris Paul and rocking in his old man rocking chair for the media to discuss it was trading promising point guard Darren Collison along with James Posey in a deal that brought back Trevor Ariza. Filled with regret, 0 to 10. How do you look back at that?
2. Only a 2. Honestly, Darren Collison is not significantly better than Jarrett Jack. A little bit. May turn into a little bit more, but right now he's not. And it got rid of James Posey, who was a horrible weight. It allowed the Hornets a little bit of flexibility. They didn't get to use very much of it in order to bring in anybody to help with Chris Paul and David West. But, you know, I don't see any reason to get upset over taking a, you know, top, you know, someone who's in the 10 to 20 range for point guards in the league and trading him along with a horrible contract for a completely useless player for a the starting small forward who's played for us for 2 years. And even if Ariza is not fantastic, he's not awful. I mean, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, the only reason it's a little higher for me, I'd say about a 5, is because with 2020, you saw that a little later that year, Gerald Wallace basically was given away. I think if the Hornets would have waited, they could have constructed some other multi-team deal in which they were able to unload Collison and Posey and get back Gerald Wallace instead. That's the only reason for me is you gave up a decent commodity for Trevor Ariza, and then a couple months later, a better small forward in Gerald Wallace was got for basically nothing. So a little higher for me, but Dems couldn't have known that. And he was in a situation where he had to move right then and there. So, all right. So
I have one for you here.
Okay.
So this is, of course, same time period. The Hornets made a move for the immortal Jared Bayless from Portland, shipping a first rounder off to the Trailblazers in order to acquire him. Bayless, of course, was later turned around with Stojakovic for our good old buddy Jarrett Jack. So on a scale of 0 to 10, what is your regret level for trading away that first rounder, which was 21st in this previous draft, and there were some decent players taken after that point. What is your level of regret?
I got to say an 8. That one's pretty high, and it's not just because of the first rounder, although that's tough, but it's the trickle-down effect that happened because of that trade. So they're looking for a backup point guard. I mean, going into that season, they were trying anything. They brought up, you know, almost everybody from the D League. They were, you know, they were signing guys. I'm trying to even remember names.
Mustafa Shakur, wasn't he?
He was one of them. There was a guy that they had signed right before the season started.
Oh, from the Spurs. Yeah.
They had made a trade, and Spurs fans were even, I can't even remember that guy's name, but they were just trying. And so they wind up settling on Jared Bayless, who is more of a combo guard, has, you know, had a lot of potential. I mean, I remember going into that draft, a lot of people thought that Oklahoma City was going to take Bayless and not Westbrook. So had a lot of potential, so you can't blame them there. But the first rounder, there's plenty of guys in this draft, several of which I know the Hornets would love to have. Montajunas, who we talk about, who you know, they would love to pry away from Houston in this Cayman trade. Kenneth Farriad, who's just, you know, if you were to put the typical Hornet, you know, what these guys seem to love, he fits all of it. I mean, he can't score, but he plays a ton of defense and rebounds. So that's a Monty and Dell type of guy right there. Marshawn Brooks, who is going to be starting for the all-rookie team. I mean, he's had a fantastic year for the Nets. And then the guy you mentioned earlier, Norris Cole. So plenty of guys right around where the Hornets were picking that they could have snatched up. But beyond that, it was just Bayless was such a horrible fit. And then essentially they took the one huge trip that the chip that they still had left, the Peja expiring contract, and moved him with Bayless to get back Jarrett Jack, who I wish we had this Jarrett back Jack that we've seen this year, last year. But other than the game-winning shot in game, what was it, 4 against the Lakers?
Yeah.
He really wasn't that good for the Hornets last year. And now, you know, just an average guy on a team that's 4-20. So it was just a series of moves that happened that I really would prefer that the Hornets could have gone into this offseason and selected another young talent to help this building process.
Yeah, my number is lower. It's about a 5. And it's more because I like Jarrett, the way Jarrett Jack is working with this team right now. I mean, I don't think Jack is anything spectacular, but I mean, there's a lot of expectations that somehow people were going to turn Peja on his expiring contract into something amazing. And there were so many expiring contracts last year that just wasn't going to be realistic. So, I mean, yeah, I would have liked to have another young player. But, of course, Dell couldn't have known that, you know, Chris Paul would have walked back this summer and said, absolutely no way I'm staying here. Get rid of me now.
Yeah.
I mean, he was basically hoping that that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, it was, again, a tough situation. And just not my favorite trade of the regime. So, speaking of trades that make people upset, going to open the can of worms with this one. Trading Marcus Thornton for Carl Landry. What is your level of regret with that?
Zero.
Ooh.
So, and it has more to do with the situation than the fact that I don't like Marcus Thornton, because I do like Marcus Thornton. So, as we have, if you go look at his numbers right now for Sacramento, other than that blistering start, he's pretty much a ordinary shooting guard. He's nothing amazing. He's nothing awful. He's better than anything we've got at shooting guard with Eric Gordon on the bench. But, I mean, Landry and Thornton, as far as I'm concerned, they're a wash. They basically score about the same amount. Landry's a little bit more of a has more efficiency than Thornton does, but Thornton has a little bit more basketball skill and can create a few more shots for himself. So as far as I'm concerned, they're essentially trading the same player, and they might be the same height for as I can tell. So, I mean, I don't think Marcus Thornton is going to help a team develop into a winning basketball team any more than Landry is. So it's a wash for me. I don't care.
Let me ask you this. If the Hornets don't make that trade and Sacramento throws a four-year, $32 million offer at Thornton, do you think the Hornets match this offer?
No.
So he's pretty much gone away.
No. Well, I mean, I think part of it is also, Monty was not a Thornton fan. I mean, there's no way that Dell Demps is going to invest that kind of money in a player that Monty was not interested in playing. So, I mean, that's part of the equation we have to take into account is even if Marcus Thornton was on our team, he wouldn't be playing the 36, 37 minutes he's playing for Sacramento. He'd be playing, well, maybe with Bellinelli playing the way he is, he'd get a little bit more. But even then, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, he would not be getting big minutes.
Yeah. For me, it's the same. It's a zero. I mean, I would do the trade all over again for Landry. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe there would be another trade out there, but I don't think that Thornton is coming back after the season anyway. Landry obviously wound up having a bigger impact in the playoffs because of the David West injury than Thornton would have. So I think both for last year and the future, it was the better move. But yeah, Thornton went off for 28 points last night, and you could just hear the Hornets fans getting restless and looking back at that trade as if that's going to be the – I mean, I live here in Jacksonville, and it's been 2 years, and people still talk about every day whether the Jaguars should have drafted Tim Tebow. And I have a feeling that Hornets fans are going to be living with this Thornton thing for at least as long as Jags fans and Tebow. So – I just hope they get over it and realize he wasn't staying, he wasn't playing, and it was better for the future.
All right. So I got one more regret for you. And again, it's a big versus small kind of thing. So the Hornets, or actually the league office, were demanding certain things from the Clippers. And for a while, there was some consideration about whether Eric Bledsoe was required to be part of that deal or not. And instead, the Hornets opted for Al-Farouq Aminu. And it's not 100% certain where you could pick one or the other, but that seemed to be the implication. The Hornets insisted on Aminu. Bledsoe remains a Clipper. Do you have any regret about them insisting on Aminu over Bledsoe?
Yeah, I mean, it's It's tough. I try to be as optimistic as possible, but it's really, I'll admit that I'll be really surprised if Aminu turns the corner, you know, and develops. And it would be nice if this team had a point guard moving forward that they can consider the point guard of the future. I mean, I think that there's far more small forwards in this upcoming draft that I would feel comfortable with, you know, than point guards. So I don't know if I could have Aminu or Bledsoe right now, I would probably take Bledsoe. Just looking to the future, wouldn't have made the Vasquez trade. So basically, it's Bledsoe and Pondexter or Vasquez and Aminu. And I would probably take Bledsoe and Pondexter and be happy to be developing a point guard who could be a starting point guard in the future, then look to draft somebody like Kid Gilchrist and in the lottery. So I would say that's about a six for me. And if I could go back or if I could do it now, I would rather have Bledsoe in that trade than Aminu.
To me, I think it's a wash. I think Bledsoe is going to be just as bad as Aminu is. Do you know what Bledsoe's PER is right now?
I mean, he hasn't played much. He
has played 1 minute in one game, and somehow he has managed a PER of -40.4. I didn't know you could actually get a PER below like -5. I'd never seen that before, so I was pretty impressed. I guess you could just put it this way. He is that special that he can get a -40 PER. I don't know. Bledsoe, people talked about him like he was, you know, just going to be the next, you know, I forget what all the comparisons were. Some of them said that he's going to be like Darren Collison, DJ Augustin. None of these people inspire me as like, oh, that's the next woo. But he had a lot of speed to him.
Yep.
But he just had a major knee injury. So, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I root for Aminu, and we'll see. It's just
I understand where you're going with that, though. You want the young guys who can develop. But, you know, Aminu's a young guy. Vasquez is a somewhat young guy.
Yeah, I just don't think that either of those guys really have starter potential. And I think if the Hornets fall in the right place in the lottery, they're going to fall in love with one of two of the small forwards that are coming out in this year's draft. And Aminu will just get pushed back. And there really aren't any point guards I love in this draft that I think will be a good fit. So,
all right. So shall we move on to what's coming up this week?
Oh, yes.
Because it's something to look forward to. We went 0-4. So is there any chance we're not going 0-4 again? What do we got coming up this week?
I will guarantee we're not going 0-4 this week.
Because there's only three games?
I don't know how it happened. I mean, in this, it seems like there's a game on every night, but I guess this week the Hornets only have three games. They actually have two nights off at the end on the weekend. So yeah, we got a nice little homestand here, Sacramento at home, then Chicago at home, and Portland at home. A night's rest between each game.
Wow.
Yeah, it's setting up nice schedule-wise. Chris Kamen is coming back.
Domination on the boards,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, we should probably get a press release over what kind of shoes he's choosing to wear for his big return game. So, yeah, three games, Sacramento at home, Chicago at home, Portland at home. Any of those games you more interested in than the others?
Well, I'm interested to watch the Portland game because I cannot figure out how Portland is remaining as good as it is. I mean, last year they had Brandon Roy struggling badly, and they remained on top. But, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of LaMarcus Aldridge. He's always made me think of David West, a skinnier, taller David West. But as far as skill set goes, he was pretty much the same, I'd thought. So I'm just interested to watch him play, see what he does, and see where – I mean, I've always been a huge fan of Gerald Wallace, and you've been aware of that. So, and I'm just trying to figure out where else is the punch coming from. Their point guard, Felton, has been terrible. Wes Matthews hasn't been all that fantastic. Batum, although he's been talked about as like the second coming, he's just not. He's never impressed me that much. So, what is this team? Where is this team's excellence coming from?
Just a bunch of slightly above averageness. I mean, yeah, they have Batum is actually at a 19 PER right now. Aldridge is playing at an all-star level, but then yeah, after that, they just have a bunch of average guys, but you know, they're deep enough. They have a home court advantage, you know, that they've always had. And I think in this season, home court is more prevalent than ever. So you take care of your home games and you win, I don't know, 30% on the road and you're a playoff. I mean, they're 11-1 at home and they're 3-9 on the road. That's really all you've got to do in this crazy season is win your home games,
right.
And they're doing it. So yeah, they're a 3-9 team on the road, and they're going to be coming to New Orleans. that's a game that the Hornets could possibly steal.
So did you want to talk about either of the other teams?
I guess Sacramento. I think I will say. I know I just said that the Hornets can win the Portland game, but my honest belief is that if the Hornets don't win this game Monday night at home against Sacramento, they will not win another game before the All-Star break.
It's a big statement.
They got these three games. They got Utah at home, and then they go on a big road trip right before the All-Star break that ends in their back-to-back-to-back against Oklahoma City, Indiana, and Cleveland. If this team wants to know, you know, what a win feels like, they've got to win this game against Sacramento on Monday night. And I don't know. I mean, I'll say it's about a push. I don't think either team would be a drastic favorite or underdog, but I mean, there's no doubt that Sacramento has far superior talent in that game.
Yeah, I don't know. I could still. There's a couple games in the middle of that road trip that the Hornets would have a chance for. Really, at the start of the road trip, both Milwaukee and the Knicks are not particularly impressive. You could easily see him pull off a win against either of those. I mean, I know everybody's terrified by Jeremy Lin and his point guard outburst, but come on, it's one freaking game. Dan Dickow scored 27 in the game once.
All right. I mean, yeah, I know they're not that good. They've won 9 games, which doubles the Hornets. The Hornets were 0-2 against the Knicks team last year, and they had Chris Paul and David West. I guess in the NBA, any team could win on any given night, but I see the Hornets as drastic underdogs, and that I don't know. The Sacramento game is huge, so I hope anybody who's going kind of gets up for that game and roots the Hornets on to victory, because you know, we want ping pong balls, but that would just be, it's going to be sad. This team needs to get to double digits wins on the year.
Yeah. Did you know that Dan Dickow once had a 23-10 game?
Yeah. I don't watch the D League that often, so I didn't see that one.
No, that was as a Hornet.
What?
He also had a game with 16 assists. Dude is rolling.
Oh, when you got somebody like Lee Nail on to get the ball to,
you
get out of the way. You dish him, you just get out. So 3 games. All right.
0-3.
That's your prediction. I'm saying.
Yeah.
I go 1-2. They're okay. Winning that Sacramento game, a huge game by Marco Bellinelli. Belly comes up huge as none of the Sacramento guards play a lick of defense, and Belly goes off for 24. The victory.
Bellinelli isn't even getting on the floor anymore.
All right, J-Lo. All right. Well, we got to cut this one short because it's Super Bowl Sunday, but.
Yep. So, everybody, thanks for listening to In the Know, and we'll come back next week, and hopefully we'll be talking about a Chris Kaman trade, right? Fantastic. Let's have the ball talk each and every day.
sitting in a party town. Ain't nothing but a party.